We are talking to Lyle Gardner of Ashland, Maine, who is 85 years of age, and he is going to tell us about toting. First of all, Lyle, what does the term toting mean?
It means hauling provisions, hay, oats, and pork, and beans, and all kinds of provisions, bedding, whatever is required for a camp in the woods.
I see. And this is done by horse and...
Done by horses. And what is called a tote wagon. A wagon with a high body.
Mm-hmm.
Big wheels and high body.
And now in the wintertime they had sleds?
Had sleds. Tote sleds, they called them.
I see. Now, were you a toter?
Yes.
You were. Where did you haul to?
I hauled to McGowan Pond, I think it was, but it's near enough to say that.
Mm-hmm.
From Uncle Ears Gardner was a contractor for the Ashton Lumber Company.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to cut as high as 5 and 6 million in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And father, I think, wasn't feeling very well, so he told me to take the team and go up, take a load up there, up to McGowan Pond. That's my first trip.
Mm-hmm.
And after that I went several times.
Now just where is McGowan Pond?
It's west of the Machias, about 'I know it's west of the Machias.
Mm-hmm.
We hauled from McGowan Pond. McGowan Pond is a tributary, goes into the Machias.
Mm-hmm.
But we cut there and hauled the lumber down and landed it on the Machias River, Machias Bank.
I see. And now, can you tell me how many miles that was to make that trip?
Well, it was about 2 miles, I think, they hauled in the wintertime.
I see. Now, how long did that usually take?
Well, they made 2 or 3 trips a day, a team would.
I see. About how big were the loads?
The loads, they'd haul as high as 25 logs on a load on an ice road.
Mm-hmm. Could you describe for me a typical day in the toting business?
Toting? Well, we started out at about 6 o'clock, and we did well if we got, well, one trip we didn't get. We got up as far as just the other side of the Greenlaw Mountains, and we had to stay overnight and just camped right out in the open.
Mm-hmm.
Then we finished the next day.
Okay.
But the roads were hard, awfully, awful muddy, and great deep holes that would come clean up on the horse's side of the water. And there was old cordroy that was broken so that the wheels would sometimes go down into a hole just way down clear to the X pretty near.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the kind of road it was. There was no turnpike, nothing. It was just
pretty,
a logging road.
Pretty rough.
Rough, awful rough. That is the swampy place. It's when they come to the high ground, the knolls, and the high land, where the road wasn't just rocky, and big rocks in it. Wagon would bang along over them, but it was pretty good.
Mm-hmm. What was it like in the wintertime?
Well, in the wintertime it was snow. And while it was, when the road was broke, they got it broke down, it was, you could go along very nicely. It wasn't rough. The snow cushioned it so that the sled slowed right along. It packed dry down and made a road with the snow. But when they come, the big storms. Now, we don't have storms now like we had then. We'd have 2 feet and 2.5 feet and sometimes 3 feet in a storm. When you got that, if you was up there or you was down here and had to get through, why, you couldn't take much of anything but an empty sled to get through. And I can remember, I think it was 1900 or right shortly, right around 1900, before or after, there was 13 feet of snow. And my Vinyl had a camp up on the Machias, up in beyond Machias Lake, somewhere up there. And he had horses there. And they got out of feed, and they were starving. So he told the people in town the condition, and so I think there was about 20 pair of farmers with their horses and teams started out to break a road up through to get, so as to get something to feed those horses. Well, of course, the head teams didn't, they just waited. They didn't have a sled, they just, the horses just waited ahead. They had to, the snow was 3 or 4 feet deep right in the road. And then the teams that were further back, well, they had some hay and some stuff on them. They had, after the road was broke, they'd come along. Well, the first time, the first day, they got over onto what's called the prairie. That's, I think, Pod Page's field is part of it, over there. And they stayed there overnight. And when they shoveled, you could lay poles right onto the snow over the horse's back. You could walk right around underneath it. And that's where they stayed overnight. But they never made it. They got up, I guess, as far as Hooshorn, Greenlow Mountains, and then they turned around and come back. They couldn't do it. The horses starved.
How many horses did they use for a team?
Well, they had just a pair.
Just a pair.
Yeah.
And they never needed any more than just one
no,
pair.
No, they never used four. They'd get tangled up. Mm-hmm. They're just wading in snow. Some of them would get down, and they'd just use a pair.
Now, were the sizes of the horses any
they,
different?
They were
than
big horses.
They were big.
They were draft horses. Mm-hmm. But Father's team was small. They were light, probably 1300. They weighed 1300. But some of the other teams, the big horses, couldn't make it very well in the snow, deep snow. They weren't nimble enough. They weren't light enough. They put them small, light teams ahead to break the road, see? And the big, heavy horses coming behind where they had the sled and they was hauling what they had to haul.
Well, that's interesting. I should think that the bigger horses would be able to...
No, they're too heavy. They're no good at all in the snow. They'd play right out and lay down. But the light horses, they'd keep right on going, just like a dog.
Hmm. Now, could you describe for me the wearing apparel that the toters wore, especially like in the wintertime when it was really cold?
Well, I had woolen stockings, probably 2 or 3 pair on. They had shoe packs. We don't see them now.
What were those?
Made of hide. And they made, they were about, well, some of them come clear to the knees, some of them come about halfway to the knee, of the knees, the top of them. But they had no sole on them, they were just leather, just smooth on the bottom. And you could wade in the snow, and they were light, you know, just almost like sewing your stocking feet. And we all wore them. I wore them to school. Everybody was wearing them.
So they were nice
in the winter.
They were nice and
they were warm. Mm-hmm. And they were pliable, see? They weren't like a heavy sole shoe, you know. Is that all?
Now what about jackets or coats or anything like this? I mean,
well, they were heavy, knit sometimes, undergarments. Sometimes they were heavy flannel undergarments, what they called heavy. They were all quarter of an inch thick. They were awfully heavy, they keep you warm. They wouldn't, I never liked them anyway. They were too much. But that's what they wore. And then they had sweaters, they had frocks, these Mackinac frocks, you know, heavy Mackinac frocks. Some of them had overcoats. Some had, George Walker used to wear a coonskin, I think, a buffalo overcoat. Them days they wore a lot of buffalo overcoats and bear skin overcoats and overcoats that have made the skins of animals.
I see. Do you recall any interesting or amusing stories about your toting days that you might be able to share with us?
Toter, I'm saying this, was always toted. I won't mention his name, but he's a man in town here. Everybody's relation to him, so am I. And he'd get to drinking and he'd get to crying. And he'd go drive along and he'd cry and talk about, he was jealous of his wife and he was, was a great fella to cry anyway when he'd get drunk. And he always had a hard time. One time, there was some of the boys went to the fair with him. Now, he was a toter, this fellow. He went to the fair, and he fell in love with the girls that were riding on the motorcycles. And on coming home, he wanted to buy one of them. He wanted to buy the motorcycle and all, see? He says, I'll buy it, and I want you with it, see? Well, then he got up to Haystack up here, they said, what's your wife going to say? Well, he hadn't thought of that. What's your wife going to say when you come home with her? Well, they got him to crying that day.
Well, now on some of your trips, you said that you had to stay overnight sometime.
Mm-hmm, we did.
Now, what did you do at night? Did you sing, or did you have some kind of amusement?
We'd get in, eat our supper, and we'd go into the camp, and they usually had someone could play a mouth organ or a fiddle, and they'd play, and they had a board tacked onto the floor of the camp where they'd step dance. I used to step dance. And you'd be surprised how many men would step dance, first one and then another. And they danced different steps, see? Well, it was a lot of fun. And then we had singers. They sang all kind of old love songs and war songs and all kind of wood songs and amused themselves that way. And it was very entertaining. Some of them were very good singers. And they knew a lot of these old songs. And some of them were very romantic, very touching. I liked them. They were really good. It's all us about some love affair or about somebody got jealous. And they killed one of the others and so forth. That would be the song, the type of song. Of course, they had other types of songs I wouldn't mention, but a lot of them, too.
What time did you have to get up in the morning after you stayed overnight at one of these?
Oh, they usually got up, the cooks were up at 4 o'clock, but they called the men out about 6.
Did you have good meals?
Oh, they had extra good meals. Everything, I never was in the woods yet, but everything was cooked good. Cooked good, and it was good, a hearty food.
Mm-hmm. What was a typical breakfast?
Well, beans, usually.
Beans.
And of course they had other things to go with them. There was applesauce and prune sauce. They had toast. I've seen them make much as 4 or 5 loaves of toast. They'd toast them and they'd be stacked up with butter in between them as high as a foot high.
Hmm?
Well, yeah. Nice brown toast. It was very cooked to fix, very nice too. Wet, you know, and stacked up.
Well, tell me, Laura, how many years were you in the toting business?
Oh, I wasn't only just 1 year toting, but I worked in the woods 11 winters.
Oh, I see.
I was what they call a sled tender.
What?
Well, that is, I knotted the logs and loaded them onto the sled. We had a great big hauling sled, and I had to put it on, get under it and get it on my neck and stand up and straighten up, and he'd step to the horses and they'd straighten the rigging and I'd walk around with it. And the boys, the first time I tried that, I told the teamster, I said, I never can do it. Oh, you laughed at me. He says, you great big lout. He said, you could do that. He said, not. And then he took and done it, see. He said, watch me. And but if you don't know how, you can't. But when them horses step ahead and pull up the rigging, that lifts the nose of the sled up and you can walk right around. But if the nose of the sled ain't lifted off the ground, you can't get nowhere.
How'd you make out on your first try?
Well, I did it. I got so I did it right along. But I never liked it. It was heavy.
Did you like it?
Big yarding sled. The runners on it was 12 foot long. Well, 10 foot long anyway. Big steel shoes on them. It was heavy. It would weigh at least 400 pounds right on your neck. But you'd straighten up, see? When the horses would step ahead, that would lift it up and it would straighten it up, and they took part of the load. And the team that was used to it, he'd chirp to them, and they wouldn't go ahead. They'd just step, just hold that right there till you got around. They knew just how to do it, but I couldn't lift it off the ground unless the horses started, because they'd lift the whole front of the sled right up. See when they.
So did you enjoy toting better than the other job?
No, I don't think so. Toting wasn't much of a job. I didn't like it. You was always in danger of breaking down. You know, the old wheels would go to pieces or something, and then there you'd be.
What'd you do then?
Well, you'd have to wire them up, fix them up the best way you could. If you didn't, well, you'd have to, I don't know what you do. I never had it happen, but some of them did.
You probably had a long walk.
Yes, they did.
Well, Lyle, have you got anything else you'd like to tell us now about toting your life in the woods?
I went into the woods when I was 15 years old. There was Joe Terrio, Nat Terrio, and I. We were all, Joe was a year older, Nat was a year younger. We were all, and we worked on the main road. With an old fellow by the name of Rob Wood. He was showed us boys what to do, see. And that's what we did. I was up there, I went out as for Uncle Ears too. I was up on 20 Mile Brook. And I worked there a month or so, and then I bought me a suit of clothes and went to high school the rest of the winter.
Well, Niall, it's been very interesting listening to you.
Well, I wish that I could, if I could, I can't remember, see, a lot of things that was... But I'll tell you one about the cheese. Old Man Trafton and Dr. Doran was up to Mercedes, up where Trafton lived, and there was a man come along riding on a horseback, a green young fellow about 17 or 18 years old, was Asiarch. And this farmer come along, he had a big new round of cheese in the back of his wagon. And Ace was young, and he was hungry. He reached one of them big hands right out, and he just took a big handful right out of that cheese. And Captain said, look, doctor, he said, look at that. And he says, you see what that boy's done? He says, lesser animal lesson, lesser animal lesson. He says, I'll tell him that cheese is poison for rats. It'll kill him. He says, to make it work, I want you to fix him up a dose. And tell him that you've got to drink this or you'll die. And he gave him Epicac that vomited him, see? Made him sick. So he was coming back down home and he was vomiting. Every once in a while he'd do poking his vomit. Then someone met him and said, Ace, what happened? What's the matter? I got poisoned, he said.
Well, now, you told us that you did some singing in the camp at night. Do you think you might be able to sing one for us now?
As I went a-walking for pleasure one day, for a sweet recreation, on to pass Castaway. As I was a-sitting by the side of a path, who should happen for to come along but a young Indian lass. She sat down beside me, and she then took my hand, saying, I think you are a stranger from some foreign land, and if you come with me, you are welcome to come, for I live by myself in the coconut grove. Just as the sun was setting all o'er the salt sea, I rambled along with the lass of Mohee, and together we rambled, and together we roamed, till I came to her cottage in the coconut grove. I believe the next morning, as I was going away, it grieved my heart sorely, those words she did say, saying, if you'll consent, love, to stay here with me, I will teach you last time I saw her, she stood on the sand, and as a ship passed by her, she waved in her hand, saying, when you get home to the prince that you love, you will think of the last of Mohi and the coconut grove. And it's now I am landed safe on my native shore, where friends and relations gather round me once more, and among all that comes round me, and among all that I see, there is none I can compare with the Lesser Mohi.